Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Alright, everybody, welcome back inside the Mid-American Bandwagon Podcast, episode 68, coming to you here tonight. As always, I am Zach Folador, joined by my co-host, my partner in crime, Steve Helwick, joining us live from Houston. It was a huge week in college football week this week here, Steve. I mean, Coach O out at LSU at the end of the year. We got six schools going to the AAC. Lane Kiffin was hit with a golf ball in Knoxville in his return. A lot going on, a lot to get to here tonight. How you doing, man?
I'm doing excellent. And also, an undefeated team fell on a Wednesday night, and there was a field rush last night in Boone, North Carolina, a beautiful place to watch a football game. App State took down its first-ranked opponent since 2007. I think we all know what happened that day. But yeah, that was Coastal Carolina was just destroying opponents. Buffalo was the only team to come close with them all year. And App State, 1 week after getting annihilated by Louisiana, comes back and pulls off the upset at home. So it's, you know, I think we're in for another wild week. 10 undefeateds remain, and we're almost getting into 07 territory. We're one Georgia loss away from 07.
Yes, and I am here for it. And you know what the most impressive thing about that game was to me last night for App State? They packed 31,000 people in their stadium on a Wednesday night. I don't know how many group of five teams could do that. I mean, that's an impressive fan base they have there at App State. I was really impressed by that atmosphere there. And they looked great too, as you said, a nice bounce back win for them after losing to Louisiana last week. But anyway, that's the Sun Belt. We're here to talk about the MAC. Steve, we had some great games this past weekend here in the MAC. A couple close ones, a couple ones that we thought were going to be close. It didn't turn out that way. What do you think? We'll start with our performances of the week here. What did you have as your most impressive performance this Saturday?
Northern Illinois has gone full committal to the run game, and it's someone new every week. We had Harrison Whaley pre-injury, who was dominating that. And then we had some Clint Ratkovich. Then we had Ontario Brown take off. And now Jay Ducker last week gets 33 carries and handles him for 210 rushing yards. And he outgains Bowling Green's entire team on the ground. And Northern Illinois puts up 34 points in a win where they only passed eight times. The Huskies are 5-2. They're the only undefeated team in MAC play. And I'm very impressed with how the running game's going. And I like that they're not afraid to fully commit to the ground game. And it's paying dividends thus far.
How about this Northern Illinois offensive line? I mean, last year, you can see now what the plan was last year when Coach Hammack started so many young guys. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they had five freshman starters on the offensive line last season for the Huskies, very young. And it's paying dividends now. I mean, as you said, it seems like they're just picking guys off the quad on campus and putting them at running back. And it doesn't matter. They're picking up 100 yards a game and, you know, 5 yards a carry. This is a very, very good offensive line. And as you said, they've gone full committal to the run game here. Rocky Lombardi only thrown eight passes last week, but it didn't matter. And yeah, shout out to Jay Ducker. Only had 24 carries coming into last week, had 33 for 210 against the Falcons. A very nice performance. My performance of the week, I had two written down, Steve. That was one of them. The other one I'm going to go with here, though, how about the Western Michigan defense? I know it might sound a little counterintuitive to say that they played well when they gave up 31 points, but when you consider what Kent State is capable of offensively, and then you look at what Western Michigan did to them, I was really impressed with that, Steve. Obviously, I was a little bit critical of them last week, and I had a lot of questions about them after that performance against Ball State. But, I mean, last week, their rush defense especially, holding Kent State 34 carries for 124 yards, 3.6 yards per carry. You know, they're coming in, you know, Kent State in the top 20 in the country in rushing yards, averaging almost 250 rush yards a game. The only team that had held Kent State to less yards on the ground this year is Iowa. And Iowa, as we all know, a great defense. They're seventh in the country in rush defense. They held the Flashes to 79. But again, you know, they Kent State ran for 220 yards against Texas A&M. They ran for 150 yards against Maryland. I mean, they've done it against some good defenses this year. And, you know, Western Michigan now 29th in the country in rush defense at 115 yards a game. I was really impressed with what they did to the Flashes on Saturday, Steve.
Yes, and coming out of the gate, I thought Kent State might go punch for punch with them when Dustin Crum drove that offense right down the field. But Western Michigan's defense got a lot of opportune sacks and then turnovers later in the game. And it was that fumble after halftime. And the Broncos were able to get a 33-point win over Kent State, 64 points for Western Michigan. Very impressive performance for them.
Yeah, I think that that fumble right after the half really kind of felt like the turning point in the game. You know, Kent State got that field goal right before halftime to cut it to six. Looked like they were going to make it a game. They had the ball first out of halftime and that fumble. And then Western Michigan goes right down and scores. And all of a sudden, you know, it's a 13-point game again. And the Broncos never looked back from that point. What about other side of the spectrum here, Steve? Disappointing performance of the week for you. What do you got?
I'm just going to give it to the entire Toledo football team at this moment. It's Toledo has been on a decline ever since that loss against Notre Dame that they probably should have won. I know they beat Ball State before Ball State figured itself out, but Toledo's lost some winnable low-scoring games recently, and I say it every week. The defense always shows up and holds teams to a reasonable margin. I mean, they only allowed 6 second-half points to Central Michigan while the offense started cooking. But here's the problem. The offense did nothing in the first half. They've gone fully to Daquan Finn at quarterback instead of Carter Bradley. And Finn didn't really get his rushing attack going as he would have planned. I mean, Central Michigan had him wrapped up for 7 sacks. That offensive line wasn't really performing very well at all. And they couldn't seem to break off many long Bryant-Kobach runs in the game. So the offense just wasn't at the point where it needed to be. Toledo didn't commit as many penalties in this game as they usually did. And actually, Central Michigan committed more. So this time it was more just offensive ineptitude, it felt like, from the Rockets, who completed fewer than 50% of their passes in the overtime loss. And I wasn't really impressed with Central Michigan in any of their other games this year. So I thought this was a game that Toledo should have probably won. But the Rockets now are at 3-4, 1-2 in the conference. It looks like another disappointing season's coming for the Rockets in the Jason Candle era.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with this, Steve, especially with that last one of those last points you made, which was that I haven't been overly impressed by Central Michigan in, you know, recent, at least not since MAC play started. And so I really felt like this was a game that Toledo was going to, you know, get it together and win this game. But man, that the offense, they don't seem to know what they want to do offensively. They have an identity crisis. And if you're going to go, my thinking is that, you know, if you're going to make the switch to Daquan Finn, I think that's great. He's supremely talented and, you know, he does a lot. He brings a lot to the table. But if you're going to do that, you got to adjust the game plan a little bit for his strengths. I mean, to, you know, trot him out there as the starter and ask him to throw the ball 32 times, I don't think that's the best use of his talents. I'm not saying he's not going to develop into a drop back passer, but if you want to throw the ball 30 plus times a game right now, I feel like if that's the identity you want, Carter Bradley is probably the better option. And you know, if you're going to put Daquan Finn in there, let him use his legs a little bit. I think he's going to continue to develop. I think he's supremely talented. I think he's going to get a lot better. But I think right now, I don't know if they're going to ask him to do that. I feel like they're not using him to the best of his abilities at the moment. I don't know. What do you think? Am I overly analyzing that?
I think I would agree with that. I mean, two quarterback systems don't always work the best. And I could see that Toledo is going to lean this way after Finn looked better in the passing game than Bradley in the Northern Illinois game. But still, it just didn't feel like Toledo has the offense mastered. They really need a quarterback like Logan Woodside back there in the pocket, it feels like, in order to lift the passing game. And Finn is a very talented runner. And last week it was just tough because he was facing so much pressure on almost every single throw. I said Central Michigan got 7 sacks on him, hurried him a lot of times, and they just weren't able to make the most out of their offense. I think Toledo has a really talented receiving core, but getting the ball to them has been difficulty this year for their quarterbacks.
Completely agree. And for my disappointment of the week, Steve, I'm going right back to the same game that I talked about. I thought the Western Michigan defense was the performance of the week for me. I got to give my disappointment of the week to Kent State. Not just the fact that they lost to Western Michigan, but the manner in which they lost that game. You give up, you know, you give up over 600 yards of offense to the Broncos, 648 total yards, 341 yards on the ground, 6.7 yards per carry for Western Michigan. The Broncos scored on 10 of their first 12 drives in this game, Steve. Just really a terrible all-around performance from the Flashes. As we were talking about a minute ago, you know, they cut it to six right before the half with a late field goal there as time expired in the second quarter. And they were getting the ball first coming out of the break. So it was 23-17. They get the ball. They fumble on the second play there, the second half. Western Michigan goes down and scores very quickly after that. They never looked back. Western Michigan outscored the Flashes 27-6 in the third quarter of this game. And something they were talking about during the broadcast that I jotted down and I went back and looked it up, including that 27-6 margin in the third quarter here, the Golden Flashes this season have been outscored 109-30 in the third quarter. If you take out the VMI game, it's 106-16. That's not great. I don't know. I was just that performance was very disappointing to me, to the point where it made me question everything I thought I knew about Kent State.
Yeah, I told you before the game, it kind of felt like one team was in for a disastrous performance. And as much as I wanted to hype up that game for being the max game of the year, it kind of felt like it was going to be a blowout one side or the other for me. So the result didn't exactly surprise me. I just was very shocked that Western Michigan was able to put up 64 points. I know this is a talented offense, but yeah, Kent State's defense, which looked pretty good at the beginning of the year when they held A&M to 10 points at halftime, when they kept Iowa in check for most of the game, it looked improved. But seeing what Western Michigan was able to put up through the ground and then just the big plays that Caleb Ellaby was able to make through the air, I mean, averaging over 20 yards per completion with Jalen Hall and Sky Moore just zipping down the field every play, I think Kent State's defense really needs a bit of a reset and get back to where they were at the beginning of the season.
Agree completely. They seem to have lost that edge they were playing with at the beginning of the year. So they fall to 2-1 in the conference. Now they're tied for first in the East with the Red Hawks of Miami. So let's move into our Week 8 previews here, Steve. Got some interesting matchups in the MAC this weekend. We'll start off in Bowling Green. Eastern Michigan coming off that tough loss to Ball State last week. They travel down to Dwight Perry Stadium on Saturday. Bowling Green, a 3-point home underdog. Total is set at 49 in this one. This one kicks Saturday at noon on ESPN+. Bowling Green coming off that game against Northern Illinois last week where the Huskies only threw the ball 8 times. I think they'll get kind of the opposite this week. We've got Eastern Michigan and Ben Bryant coming in, slinging the ball over the yard. They're third in the MAC in passing, almost 250 yards per game. The Bowling Green pass defense has been very good this year, barely 1,000 yards allowed. So what do you think in this one, Steve? Like I said, kind of feels like a strength on strength matchup. You got the Eastern Michigan passing attack going against the Bowling Green pass defense. How do you see this one playing out?
Yes, Bowling Green's defense hasn't looked as great in recent weeks, although they didn't really have to allow any passing yards to Northern Illinois the prior week. And Eastern Michigan does like to air the ball out a lot. Ben Bryant threw 48 passes last week. Wasn't one of his more efficient games, but Ben Bryant, I mean, he's thrown the ball 40 times twice in the last 3 games for the Eagles. So I think the Eagles will have a very passing centric focus against this Bowling Green team, because they haven't really got anything going with Darius Boone or Samson Evans in the run game. Actually, Darius Boone, even though he had one of the more anomaly stats last week, is he had 2 rushing touchdowns and -4 rushing yards for a running back. Like, quarterbacks sometimes will do that because they're taking sacks, but that's a very rare stat for a running back. So I think Eastern Michigan's going to try to get Hassan Baydoun and Dylan Drummond to get past these Bowling Green cornerbacks, which have shown a lot of promise recently. And speaking of Bowling Green cornerbacks, Devon Ferguson had 17 tackles last week, which is incredible. And he's been a backfield menace this year. He's one of my favorite cornerbacks to watch in the MAC. And in that Minnesota game, he played really well in man coverage and helped keep the Gophers to under 50% completion. So I think we should have some good matchups there and a good pass defense versus a good pass offense. Now, Bowling Green, they actually got some of their running game going a little more last week, and that was just because Matt McDonald had broke out for a 49-yard run, and he seemed to be picking up yards very well. But Bowling Green's passing offense, it looked a lot like 2020 all over again. McDonald complete passes at a high rate at all, 16 of 41, which is probably one of the worst showings so far in the FBS this year. So you have to credit Northern Illinois' defense for that. And Bowling Green's offense, they haven't been able to get both the passing game and running game going in the single at a single time yet this year. And the run game still needs a lot of work. So even though they beat Minnesota, I'm trusting this Bowling Green team less and less as we get into conference play. And we're seeing Akron and Northern Illinois be able to deploy working offensive strategies on this team. And I think Eastern Michigan, a team that has shown the ability to score the ball from time and time, I think the Eagles should be able to get a lot of offense on them this year.
Yeah, I would agree with your assessment there. I would agree with your assessment. It seems like it's looking more and more like the Minnesota game was a little bit of an outlier. You mentioned offensively for Bowling Green last week. Yeah, not a great game for Matt McDonald. 16 of 41, 235 yards, only 5.7 yards per attempt there. He did have, as you mentioned, a good game on the ground there. But, you know, I think I wonder, you know, is this the week that Eastern Michigan is able to get a little bit of a run game going? First of all, kudos, shout out to you for the catching that. I didn't even notice Darius Boone's stat line when I was looking at this box score: 5 carries for -4 yards, 2 touchdowns. That has to be the first time that's ever happened. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I think, you know, if there's going to be a week whenever Eastern Michigan is going to be able to get the run game going, it's going to be this one. You know, Bowling Green giving up, you know, basically 200 yards a game on the ground. It just feels to me like Eastern Michigan has a little bit too much firepower here. They're a little bit faster paced and you know, more of an aerial team than what Bowling Green dealt with last week against Northern Illinois. But I don't know. It's, you know, if Bowling Green keeps this within 3, like the spread indicates, I'll be very surprised, to be honest with you. This one feels like a you know, Eastern Michigan, you know, seven point game, 10 point game, something like that. So, and again, that one kicks off noon on Saturday on ESPN+. Traveling up to Mount Pleasant in Central Michigan, we got the Northern Illinois Huskies. They are 3-0 in the conference after last week's 34-26 win over Bowling Green, taking on the Chippewas Saturday at noon, the kick there in Mount Pleasant. This one televised nationally on ESPNU. Very surprised by this line here, Steve. Central Michigan, a 5-point favorite over Northern Illinois. The total set at 58 in this one. I don't know, Steve, given the recent form of both teams, as you said, you know, haven't really been overly impressed with the Chippewas thus far. And then with the way Northern Illinois has been playing, I'm really surprised to see Northern Illinois getting 5 points in this game. What are you thinking?
Yes, Northern Illinois hasn't been able to win their games in completely comfortable fashion yet. And I think this one's going to be a toss-up, actually. And right now I'm leaning towards Central Michigan. I know last week I did say that Northern Illinois was going to lose to Bowling Green, but I think one of these weeks their one-dimensional offense is going to slip up, and I think it could be against a run defense that has as stacked as a front seven as Central Michigan does. So I think that Central Michigan is a pretty good matchup for Northern Illinois. And if you can remember the mid-2000s during the NIU dynasty, the Chippewas were always a team that would make them slip up. So far this year, Central Michigan's only allowing 130 yards per game on the ground at a rate of 3.7 yards per carry, which pales in the comparison of what the numbers NIU put up on their previous opponents is. So if NIU is unable to get one of those 200, 180-yard runners like they've consistently had this year, I could see Central Michigan taking advantage and pulling off the upset in Mount Pleasant in this one. But I'd like to see more out of Rocky Lombardi and what NIU can do in the pass game, because we've talked about it before. Central Michigan's defense, their secondary isn't the most prepared unit in the MAC, and I think that's how teams can usually beat Central Michigan. Toledo wasn't able to do it last week because Central Michigan applied so much pressure. But if Northern Illinois can get protection and get a passing game going, they could be able to attack Central Michigan's secondary. But I don't know if they would like to approach that method with the way they've been running the ball.
I think this game is going to be very telling for Northern Illinois. And if they are able to successfully shift their identity for this game and let Rocky Lombardi throw a little bit and take advantage of the Chippewa secondary, then I'm going to be, you know, I wouldn't want to be playing them moving forward if that's the case. But you're right. We don't know if they can do that. We don't know if Rocky Lombardi is capable of that. And also, his recent history is on your side here. Central Michigan, 10-4 in the last 14 games against Northern Illinois. And the last two games were ugly, 40-10 last year, 48-0 in 2019. I do, the one thing that concerns me for Central Michigan is is the injury report is rather lengthy. Ja'Cory Sullivan is still questionable at wide receiver. Troy Brown, the linebacker, third leading tackler, is out once again, as is defensive end Laquan Johnson. So you mentioned that strong front seven for the Chippewas. I agree with you. They're a really good unit, but they are a little bit banged up right now. You can say the same thing about the Central Michigan offensive line. I believe two starters going to be out this week on the offensive line for the Chippewas. So that's one of the other reasons, I guess, I'm kind of leaning more towards the Huskies, though. I like when we disagree, though. I like we a little have a crossfire here. And I see what you're saying, though, with Central Michigan. I mean, this Northern Illinois secondary is going to be tested. Even if Ja'Cory Sullivan doesn't play, you still got Dallas Dixon, you still got Khalil Pimpleton there, and Daniel Richardson, I think, has been playing really well for the Chippewas. I've liked what I've seen from him. So this is an interesting one. Five point favorite at home, Central Michigan is against Northern Illinois. This one kicks Saturday at 12 on ESPNU. Moving just down the road to Athens, Kent State looking to bounce back from that tough loss to Western Michigan last week, 64-31. They're taking on the Bobcats again in Athens, kick at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Ohio, a 5.5 point home underdog here. The total in this one a little bit higher, 66.5. Steve, we didn't really talk about it in the introduction, but another heartbreaker last week for Ohio. They dominated the first half of that game against Buffalo, and the Bulls come back and win on a walk-off field goal at the end of the game, 27-26. It feels like this is a game they can have some success offensively, though. Kent State's rush defense has not been good this year. They're 121st nationally in rushing defense, 213 yards per game. That's what Ohio wants to do offensively. It feels like this could be a big game for DeMontre Tuggle and the guys in the backfield there, Armani Rogers for the Bobcats. What do you think about this one? How do you see this one playing out?
I do like the Kent State spread with 5. I think Kent State will be able to get their offense going again this week. And I do know that Ohio does have that good matchup with the run game versus a run defense, but I still think that Kent State has too much firepower for this Ohio team to keep up with him. Ohio is a team just like NIU where they're going to keep things grounded. They've switched to Armani Rogers at quarterback, and they only passed 10 times last week. And Armani Rogers is really the focal point of the offense now as a runner. He had more carries than the rest of the team combined with 22 last week. He had that 99-yard run, setting the FBS record for longest quarterback run of all time. But I would like to see more out of the Ohio running backs. DeMontre Tuggle only getting 8 carries last week was kind of a surprise to me because he seems like he's been running the ball pretty well. He had that 200-yard game against Akron recently, so I would like to see Ohio get more of Tuggle, O'Shawn Allison involved against this Kent State run defense and see where that leads him, because Sean Tyler and Western Michigan had a lot of success against them last week. But through the air, I thought Kyle Van Treese had one of his better games as a passer, and I think Dustin Crum's going to be able to pick apart this team. Dustin Crum, very crafty player on offense, and we saw him a few weeks ago against Buffalo throw for a career-high 400 yards in a game, and getting Cephas, Nykeem Johnson, and the receiving core involved against this Ohio defense, we could see a similar result, I think, where Kent State pushes 50 points and they have a dominant passing game. So I think that I like Kent State with the spread in this one. And I think that the Flashes will be able to get back on track and go to 4-4. But after Ohio's figured things out and they've discovered their identity, they are a trap game for every team in the MAC. Central Michigan and Buffalo were very fortunate to overcome those traps in the fourth quarter.
Completely agree with that. Yeah. And it feels like the pace of Kent State is going to be tough for the Bobcats to deal with. Such a dynamic offense there. And I agree with what you're saying about the running backs too. I would like to see Tuggle and Allison get a little bit more involved here. I mean, DeMontre Tuggle averaging over 6 yards per carry. And as you said, only 8 carries last week against the Bulls. I do feel like Ohio is going to have some success here offensively. And while I could see Kent State getting to 50, I could see Ohio putting up some points in this one as well. I know you said you like Kent State in the spread. To me, even though that total 66.5 is a high, I could see this one going over. I can see the Bobcats getting to 20, 28 points somewhere in that ballpark. Because again, I mean, you got two bad rush defenses in this game. You got Kent State giving up 214 yards a game, Ohio giving up 225. So, you know, I don't feel like there's going to be much success for either defense in this one. Although I think obviously the passing attack and Dustin Crum will absolutely separate themselves from the Bobcats here. So again, this one kicks Saturday at 1 o'clock in Athens. Kent State traveling to Ohio.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Traveling to Muncie now, we got Miami taking on Ball State on Saturday in the Redbird rivalry. 3:30, Ball State a 5.5-point favorite in this one at home. The total set at 51.5. Steve, I really liked your preview on this one. I love the stat here I pulled out of it. Plitt had never exceeded 200 yards in the first four games. He threw zero touchdowns, three interceptions. On the current win streak, seven touchdowns, zero interceptions. Really seems like he's turned his season around, as have the Cardinals. They've now won 3 in a row, 4-3 overall. They're right back in the thick of things in the West Division. Miami coming off of a couple nice victories at home, knocked off Akron last week. What do you think about this one here? See, this is an intriguing matchup to me because Ball State's looked really good lately. Miami seems like they're getting healthy. They have, obviously, we've talked about Jack Sorensen and Matt Kippenhammer. They got some great talent on offense. What do you think about this one?
I do like Ball State winning this game. Ball State now is right there with Western Michigan as the team to beat in the MAC West. The Cardinals, they had that early slip up against Toledo where they were inept on offense, but they figured things out since Drew Plitt's become a great passer. He was highly efficient last week, completed a lot of short throws, and got Justin Hall, Jayshon Jackson, and Johannes Tyler, the big three, involved. And Johannes Tyler, I've mentioned before, is the guy that's really helped bolster their offense this year. Adding him adds another dimension to this offense, another target that they can have. And he's had 4 touchdowns in the last 3 games and his 3 best reception performances of the year. So I think that adding that to the offense has really helped Ball State go a long way. And Justin Hall is doing great things too. They involved him in the run game a bit last week, and he got 2 rushing touchdowns on the ground while having 58 receiving yards on 10 receptions. So Justin Hall was still doing Justin Hall things in the game. But also, Ball State, for the first time this year, got a 100-yard rusher. They finally established something in the rushing game, and Carson Steele finished with 138 yards. And it wasn't like he had a breakaway run like Armani Rogers' 99-yard run. It was just heavy doses of Carson Steele getting 8-9 yards on this Eastern Michigan defense, and that really helped Ball State get the win and keep pushing the offense forward. And Ball State's been starting out hot lately, too. We saw in the Army game when they started on the opening kickoff and were able to build a big lead in the first quarter. They were able to do that same thing against Eastern Michigan. And Miami has been one of the slowest teams this year in first halves, as we saw in non-conference play against Cincinnati, Minnesota, and Army. And I know Miami's picked things up lately in MAC play, but still, you don't know what you're getting out of Miami's offense on a weekly basis. There was that one game where they had just 12 points against Eastern Michigan and were held out of the end zone entirely. Their passing game seems to fluctuate on a weekly basis. They have very talented receivers in Jack Sorensen and Mac Hippenhammer, but I just don't know if I can trust this offense to hang with the current iteration of what we're seeing from Drew Plitt and the gang from Ball State. So Miami was able to take this game last year in a passing shootout with A.J. Mayer taking over for an injured Brett Gabbert. Gabbert's status for Saturday is unknown, but if Mayer takes over again, we'll see what he can do against Ball State's defense, a Ball State defense which has looked pretty improved recently, especially in the run game. Eastern Michigan couldn't get a single thing on them, and they have Anthony Ekpe back, so all MAC linebackers are back there. So I think Ball State's doing pretty well for the moment.
Yeah, you know, of all the teams in the MAC, Miami is the team like I feel I have the worst feel for, or like I know the least about. Like, I don't know what I'm going to get from Miami on a week-to-week basis. There's weeks where their offense looks great. They looked good last week against Akron. They looked good against Central Michigan a few years ago. But then in between that, you surround that with that 12-point showing against Eastern Michigan. Obviously, I think the quarterback situation has something to do with that. But I've been disappointed. You know, you mentioned Ball State's rushing defense. I've been disappointed in the Red Hawks rushing offense. Keon Mosey has had some good moments. He's got a little over 300 yards on the ground this year, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of consistency there, or just consistency in general with the Red Hawks offense. I love the point that you made about Ball State really starting fast here of these last couple weeks, and that being in contrast to Miami, because that's so true. I mean, they, even in this most recent game against Eastern Michigan, they go up 14-0 in the first quarter of that one. And it feels like if that's going to be a repeating pattern here, and that's going to show up here in this game, if Ball State's going to take that early lead, I don't know that I can see Miami coming back and battling back from that, because as you said, you know, there's been a lot of inconsistencies on that offense, despite the talent. One thing that a stat that did jump out to me that was interesting to me, not that it has any effect on this specific game. You go back to the 2016 season, Miami is 27-10 in MAC games over the last 37 games, best in the conference in that span. If you would have asked me a couple days ago who had the best record in the MAC over going back to 2016, I don't think Miami would have been in my first three guesses. So that surprised me. Also, you mentioned Justin Hall and them getting him involved in a lot of different ways for Ball State. 144.7 all-purpose yards per game for him. That's 12th most in the country, leads the MAC. So I'm in agreement with you, Steve. Ball State, I see Ball State covering in this one. Something else to consider here, you know, if Miami loses this game and Kent State beats Ohio, Kent State is back in first, sole possession of first place in the East. So some divisional implications there as well. Speaking of divisional implications, move across just a little bit east of Muncie to Northwest Ohio. Toledo taking on Western Michigan this week at the Glass Bowl. 3:30 kick for this one, CBS Sports Network. Toledo a 2.5-point home underdog in this one, the total at 55. Steve, you talked about it in your intro. It's been a disappointing year from Toledo once again. The defense has looked great. The offense has not. Western Michigan got back on track last week with that really nice win against Kent State. Feels like two teams kind of going in different directions here, but how do you see this one playing out at the Glass Bowl on Saturday?
It was the game of the year, arguably, in 2020. I don't know if you remember that week action showdown last year. Just the final 3.5 minutes, just to relive this, there was Toledo had that controversial fourth down conversion where Bryant Kobach broke the chains when he landed on the sticks and they couldn't accurately measure it. And they brought out the broken chain for the measurement, and Toledo had a 10-point lead. Western Michigan drove back down the field, converted a fourth down on the way, and they shoved Caleb Ellaby into the end zone to get it within a touchdown with get it within 4 points because they missed the extra point.
Yes.
With 45 seconds left. And then Toledo, they recovered the onside kick from and Western Michigan went right back down the field, fake spike. Jalen Hall wide open in the end zone. Just bizarre. That was peak match. And I don't know if I've ever seen a more entertaining midweek game before. I know there were those high scoring games of the early 2010s, but just the entertainment value of the final 3.5 minutes and everything that went on, it was such an electric atmosphere. But in this game, I don't see Toledo's offense putting up the same competition against Western Michigan without Eli Peters there. And Western Michigan's offense, they're rolling right now. Other than one slip up against Ball State where Caleb Ellaby threw two interceptions, which really stifled their momentum, and they lost a turnover battle 4-0 that game, Western Michigan's offense has otherwise rolled this year. They managed to take down Pitt. They managed to take down Kent State. And those were just dominant days by the rushing and passing offense. They can do it all. We saw what Sean Tyler did in the running game last week. We see what Scott Imore and Jalen Hall can do in the receiving game on a week-to-week basis. And Caleb Ellaby, I trust him so much with the ball back there. He's one of the most efficient passers in college football and finished in the top five in quarterback rating just a year ago. Western Michigan's defense was also able to apply some pressure on Kent State. And I think they might be able to do the same on Toledo after Central Michigan sacked them left and right last week. So I think that Western Michigan's going to get a pretty dominant win here at the Glass Bowl against the Rockets.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with a lot of what you say. I don't like what I see from Toledo offensively, especially the last couple of weeks. The only reason I think they still have a shot in this game is because I do believe that they have the best defense in the MAC. Their defense, I mean, first in the MAC in total defense and points per game. Their points per game, they're getting the 16th in the country, only 18.7 points per game. Their pass defense is 13th in the country, only 173 yards per game. So I think the Western Michigan passing offense versus this Toledo secondary is going to be a great matchup in this game. I really want to see if this Toledo secondary is able to match up with Sky Moore and Corey Crooms and Jalen Hall. And because Caleb Ellaby, as you mentioned, I'm right there with you. I trust him. He's probably at this point, I'm confident in saying he's the best quarterback in the conference. I mean, you look at him just on the year. I mean, 12 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 62.5% completion percentage. So is the Toledo secondary going to be able to cover Sky Moore, to cover Corey Crooms, to cover Jalen Hall? Because if they can do that, if they can slow down this Western Michigan passing attack, I think they have the rush defense to be able to shut them down, you know, in the ground game as well. I could see this being a low scoring game, Steve. I agree with you that I think Western Michigan wins this game. I don't know if I see a blowout here. The only reason I could see a blowout, the only thing that I could see happening would be, you know, just Toledo being demoralized from another close loss last week against Central Michigan. But I guess we'll learn a lot about their identity this week. I'm curious to see what Daquan Finn is able to do against this Western Michigan defense as well. Obviously, Western Michigan did very well against a similar dual threat quarterback last week. So I don't know. I don't see a lot of points in this one. If you're confident in, you know, Western Michigan winning in this game, I'm confident that 55 is way too many points in this one. I could see this one being like 24-10 or something like that, somewhere in that ballpark. So we'll see. Nonetheless, 3:30 Saturday, Western Michigan going down to Toledo, CBS Sports Network broadcasting that one nationally. One last game to get to here this week, Steve. We got the Buffalo Bulls coming off that thrilling comeback against Ohio last week. They're traveling to Akron. The Zips, an 11-point home dog in this one, the total at 57, kicking off 3:30 at InfoCision Stadium there on ESPN+. Akron freshman Kanata Mumfield was named to the Athletics midseason freshman All-America team this year, which is great news for them. Unfortunately for them, it doesn't look like a great matchup for them this weekend. They're, you know, Buffalo's going to want to run the ball. They're averaging 200 a game on the ground. Akron giving up 215 a game on the ground. I don't know. This feels like a game where Buffalo is going to be able to do whatever they want on offense, at least, Steve. What do you think in this one?
Yes. Although Akron only lost by 13 points, they got 2 fourth quarter touchdowns to make that closer last week. So Akron wasn't really as close to Miami as we would think. And I think that Buffalo's starting to, that they really needed that comeback against Ohio. And that's one of those games where a win's a win and you escape on the field goal. Now let's see what you can do the week afterward. Dylan McDuffie has been tremendous this year. They played that game without Kevin Marks, and McDuffie was able to put up 143 yards in true Buffalo running back fashion. McDuffie seems to be the number one guy that Buffalo is going to roll with now. So I think against Akron's run defense, that Buffalo should be able to put up similar performances. Remember last year, it was the Kevin Marks game against the Zips. Kevin Marks ran all over Akron in a 56-7 win. And I think that Buffalo is going to control the ground here. And I think that their secondary is going to be stellar enough to prevent Kanata Mumfield from really going off. But every week, I have to say that Akron's quarterback play has been pretty good. And Zach Gibson had 3 touchdowns, all without an interception, nearly hit 300 yards in the Miami game, threw a lot of passes, but still, the fact that Akron, who was throwing countless interceptions the past few years, and they haven't had a quarterback to interception ratio this good, like in their entire existence. I mean, I tried looking back at the stats and I couldn't even find one like back where, as far as I could look. So I think Akron this year has done a really good job at bolstering the passing game. Their offense is solid enough where they should be able to compete in games like this. But overall, I think Buffalo's running ability and their offensive line presents a good matchup, a favorable matchup for the Bulls. And yes, our weekly thing is, did Buffalo allow a sack last week? And they actually did to Ohio. So
yeah,
there's one surprising thing, but they're not allowing too many at a time, and they're still permitting fewer than one per game, which is the true standard at the University of Buffalo.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned Dylan McDuffie. I was really impressed with him last week. You know, the thing about Buffalo for me, I said this last week and I'll say it again here tonight. Can you give us 4 good quarters one of these weeks, maybe? You know, I just, you know, we had the Old Dominion game they almost gave away in the second half. We had this game here. They go down 21-0 in the first quarter. They're down 26-10 going into the fourth quarter before that comeback. So, I agree with you. They really needed that win, it felt like. And, you know, sitting now, after that victory, you're sitting at 3-4, 1-2 in the conference. You get another win here, you're back to 500, and it feels like a bowl game is within reach. So I agree. I see if you know whether or not Kevin Marks plays this week, I think Dylan McDuffie and Ron Cook are going to have plenty of success against this Akron defense. And I echo what you said as well, Steve, about Zach Gibson and the quarterback situation at Akron. It's rare to me. I can't remember many instances of a situation like this where a team like Akron, which no offense to them, but a team this bad having this good of quarterback play. It's really odd to see this. And I really just think it highlights the issues on other areas of this roster, namely along both lines. The offensive line is really, really struggling right now. They have four freshman starters on that line, so a lot of inexperience, a lot of young guys. It'll be interesting to see if that offensive line is able to take another step forward next year, similar to what we're seeing from Northern Illinois right now. We're seeing that very similar strategy pay off for the Huskies, so we'll see if it pays off for the Zips. But I don't see Akron having much success defensively in this game. As you mentioned, really that game last week against Miami was not as close as the final score would indicate. I feel like 11 is even maybe a little bit generous here. I could see Buffalo winning this one by 2 touchdowns or so, something like that. But we'll see. Obviously, that's why they play the game. So Buffalo traveling to Akron Saturday at 3:30 on ESPN Plus. Buffalo an 11-point favorite there. 57 the total in this one. So Steve, that covers all of the games for this week. Let's take a look real quick at the rest of the slate here. What always one of my favorite parts of the show, as you mentioned last night already, we had one great game. We're recording here on Thursday. App State knocked off Coastal Carolina last night, 30-27. Some really interesting matchups here this week, Steve. What are you looking at? What's on your radar?
Let's look at the schedule right now. I say this a lot of times. Memphis UCF would be a really intriguing game with healthy UCF, but that team is so banged up against Cincinnati. I just want to see Dylan Gabriel and Jalen Robinson and all those stars from the week one come back. And that was a fun game last year, a shootout, and that usually is when those two teams meet, but it won't be this week. I know this schedule is kind of rare for the best games, but I think the game I'm looking forward to most this weekend is a rare game, the first time since 2016 that Clemson is the betting underdog. They are going into the hostile environment of Heinz Field, hostile NFL environment of Heinz Field. Hopefully Pitt fans can show up now that they're ranked and actually good and favored against Clemson. But Pitt versus Clemson, you have Kenny Pickett, who has done marvelous things all year long. And it wasn't one of Pickett's better performances against Virginia Tech last week, but still 2 touchdowns, 203 yards. But Pitt's defense held Virginia Tech to 7 points, and they really dominated that matchup. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Pitt can do against a Clemson offense, which still has not broken 20 points in regulation on an FBS team this year in 5 games. Think about 20 points. Akron's done. Akron does it on like a weekly basis almost now.
It's true. And Clemson, that is crazy.
Clemson hasn't broken 20 on an FBS opponent this year. That is insanely incompetent offense compared to the Clemson team that was beating Georgia Tech 73-70 a year ago. I think Pitt wins this game. I do. I can't fall for the logos at this point. You can't fool me 5 times if you're Clemson. You have a tremendous defense. James Skalski, Baylen Specter, great linebackers, Andrew Booth, very talented cornerback. But I don't think you can get enough offensive output to match what Kenny Pickett, Jordan Addison, and this offense have going on. So that's my game of the week I'm most intrigued about.
Yeah, I hadn't seen a ton of Clemson this year until I watched them play Syracuse last Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And man, I was just not impressed at all with what I saw from the Tigers. And I tend to agree with you. As a Penn State fan in Pittsburgh, as much as it pains me to say, I agree with you. I think Pitt wins this game. And yeah, I don't know. I still think they'll struggle to get 30,000 in that stadium, but hey, that's the Penn State fan in me saying that. I think, an interesting game here to me, Steve, I mentioned at the top of the show that on Monday, LSU came out, said Ed Orgeron is going to step down at the end of the year. He travels to his former school, Ole Miss, on Saturday to take on the Rebels and Lane Kiffin. Was really impressed with what I saw from Ole Miss on Saturday night against Tennessee. That was a great game, really entertaining game. And I love what the Rebels are doing. I love watching Matt Corral. This offense, I really, really enjoy. The Lane Kiffin system has always been fun to watch. I loved watching his FAU teams a couple years back. And man, this offense, again, I love watching Matt Corral. Even in the receiving game, you know, Dontario Drummond and Braylon Sanders are electric. Braylon Sanders averaging something absurd. It's like 25 yards a catch or something like that. So I really like this Ole Miss team. I'm curious to see how LSU looks as well after the announcement coming out on Monday.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping Matt Corral plays in this game because he got banged up at the end of that Tennessee game and Luke Altmyer took over. So his status is still unknown. But if he plays, Ole Miss LSU last year was a really fun shootout. That was a game where Kayshawn Boutte, who's now out for the year, unfortunately, I think he had like 300 yards and 3 touchdowns in that game. So Ole Miss LSU is another SEC shootout possibly in the making, just like Florida LSU was last week and Ole Miss Arkansas was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's crazy. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, what's your next one?
I was going to say for another game, Big 12 showing with a deceiving spread. Iowa State is touchdown favorites at Oklahoma State. I do think the Cyclones win this game. Oklahoma State got by the skin of their teeth early on in the season, but it seems like the team's getting better as each week passes. They beat Kansas State by 11. They beat Baylor by 10, a very good and improved Baylor team. And last week they came down 17-3. Texas had the ball in the red zone. They got a pick six and ended up winning the game by 8. And I think Texas only got 14 yards on its last 17 plays. So Oklahoma State has one of the best defenses in the country. You usually know this team for their offense, but they've been getting a lot of stops this year. And teams aren't really able to run or pass the ball on them with regularity. So Oklahoma State's defense definitely deserves some props. Iowa State's looked better the past couple of weeks. And I think that the Cyclones could maybe be in to spoil Oklahoma State's perfect season in this one. The Pokes took them last year in Stillwater by a touchdown in a game that the committee kind of ignored and kept ranking Iowa State high. But I'm interested to see how this rematch goes this year and see if Oklahoma State can continue chugging its undefeated record along into Bedlam this year.
Yeah. You know, the Texas Oklahoma State game last week, it wasn't one of the games that I was focusing on, but it felt to me a little bit like Texas lost that game at more than Oklahoma State winning it. So I'm curious to see. I agree with you. I mean, you know, Jack Trice Stadium in Ames, they're a tough place to play. It also feels like Iowa State does this every year where they lose a couple games early. We start that, you know, they lose, you know, the expectations seem to weigh them down in September, and then in October, they just kind of turn it on. So I'm with you. I see Iowa State winning this one, but again, that's why they play the game. One more I'll give here from my perspective, another one that I'm looking forward to. I'm looking at the Mountain West. How about Nevada traveling to Fresno State Saturday at 7 o'clock? Two incredible quarterbacks here in this one that I'm really excited to see duke it out. Carson Strong for Nevada, Jake Haener for Fresno State. Two really good offenses here. Two probably of the favorites in the Mountain West this year, along with Boise. This is a great game to me, Steve. I think I see, you know, Nevada is a 3.5-point underdog here going into Fresno. I thought Fresno State has looked, you know, they lost to Hawaii a couple weeks ago. That's not looking like a great loss. But their defense looked great last week against Wyoming, and obviously they have that win over UCLA earlier this year. This is a really, really good Group of Five matchup that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, a lot of great receivers too. Jalen Cropper, Romeo Dubs. And yeah, Mountain West has two great matchups this week with that and Air Force San Diego State going on. Very ground-centric game that we should get on CBSSN on Saturday night. San Diego State's one of those 10 unbeatens left in the country. See if Air Force can change that for them.
Agreed. Yeah, that's another good one as well. A lot of intriguing matchups in the Group of Five conferences this week. So that's going to wrap it up for us here this week, folks. As always, I am Zach Folador with my co-host, Steve Helwick. That'll wrap it up here for episode 68 of the Mid-American Bandwagon Podcast. Thanks, as always, for stopping by. We will talk to you next week. And have a good weekend. Enjoy all the football, and we'll talk to you next Friday.